Chapter 96. Whereupon the apoplectic butler whisked off the top of the soup tureen, and shot, all at once, into a state of violent activity. There was abundance of conversation, and little fear of its ever flagging, for the good humor of the glorious old twins drew everybody out, and Tim Linkinwater's sister went off into a long and circumstantial account of Tim Linkinwater's infancy, immediately after the very first glass of champagne, taking care to premise that she was very much Tim's junior, and had only become acquainted with the facts from their being preserved and handed down in the family. This history concluded, Brother Ned related how that, exactly 35 years ago, Tim Linkinwater was suspected to have received a love letter, and how that vague information had been brought to the counting house of his having been seen walking down Cheapside with an uncommonly handsome spinster, at which there was a roar of laughter, and Tim Linkinwater being charged with blushing, and called upon to explain, denied that the accusation was true, and further, that there would have been any harm in it, if it had been, which last position occasioned the superannuated bank clerk to laugh tremendously, and to declare, that it was the very best thing he had ever heard in his life, and that Tim Linkinwater might say a great many things, before he said anything which would beat that. There was one little ceremony peculiar to the day, both the matter and manner of which made a very strong impression upon Nicholas. The cloth having been removed, and the decanters sent round for the first time, a profound silence succeeded, and in the cheerful faces of the brothers there appeared an expression, not of absolute melancholy, but of quiet thoughtfulness very unusual at a festive table. As Nicholas, struck by this sudden alteration, was wondering what it could portend, the brothers rose together, and the one at the top of the table leaning forward towards the other, and speaking in a low voice, as if he were addressing him individually, said, Brother Charles, my dear fellow, there is another association connected with this day which must never be forgotten, and never can be forgotten, by you and me. This day, which brought into the world a most faithful and excellent and exemplary fellow, took from it the kindest and very best of parents, the very best of parents to us both. I wish that she could have seen us in our prosperity, and shared it, and had the happiness of knowing how dearly we loved her in it, as we did when we were two poor boys, but that was not to be. My dear brother, the memory of our mother. Apostrophe, good Lord. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thought Nicholas, and there are scores of people of their own station, knowing all this, and 20,000 times more, who wouldn't ask these men to dinner, because they eat with their knives, and never went to school. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but there was no time to moralize, for the joviality again became very brisk, and the decanter of port being nearly out, Brother Ned pulled the bell, which was instantly answered by the apoplectic butler. David, apostrophe, said Brother Ned. Sir, apostrophe, replied the butler. A magnum of the double diamond, David, to drink the health of Mr. Linkinwater. Apostrophe, instantly, by a feat of dexterity, which was the admiration of all the company, and had been, annually, for some years past, the apoplectic butler, bringing his left hand from behind the small of his back, produced the bottle with the corkscrew already inserted, uncorked it at a jerk, and placed the magnum and the cork before his master with the dignity of conscious cleverness. Ha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Brother Ned, first examining the cork and afterwards filling his glass, while the old butler looked complacently and amiably on, as if it were all his own property, but the company were quite welcome to make free with it. This looks well, David. Apostrophe, it ought to, sir, apostrophe, replied David. You'd be troubled to find such a glass of wine as is our double diamond, and that Mr. Linkinwater knows very well. That was laid down when Mr. Linkinwater first come. That wine was, gentlemen. Apostrophe, nay, David, nay, apostrophe, interposed Brother Charles. I wrote the entry in the cellar book myself, sir, if you please, apostrophe said David, in the tone of a man, quite confident in the strength of his facts. Mr. Linkinwater had only been here 20 years, sir, when that pipe of double diamond was laid down. Apostrophe, David is quite right, brother Charles, said Ned. Are the people here, David? Apostrophe, apostrophe, outside the door, sir, apostrophe, replied the butler. Show 'em in, David, show 'em in. Apostrophe, at this bidding, the older butler placed before his master a small tray of clean glasses, and opening the door admitted the jolly porters and warehousemen whom Nicholas had seen below. They were 4 in all, and as they came in, bowing, and grinning, and blushing, the housekeeper, and cook, and housemaid, brought up the rear. 7, apostrophe said Brother Ned, filling a corresponding number of glasses with the double diamond, and David, 8. There. Now, you're all of you to drink the health of your best friend Mr. Timothy Linkinwater, and wish him health and long life, and many happy returns of this day, both for his own sake and that of your old masters, who consider him an inestimable treasure. Tim Linkinwater, sir, your health. Devil take you, Tim Linkinwater, sir, God bless you. Apostrophe, with this singular contradiction of terms, Brother Ned gave Tim Linkinwater a slap on the back, which made him look, for the moment, almost as apoplectic as the butler, and tossed off the contents of his glass in a twinkling. The toast was scarcely drunk with all honor to Tim Linkinwater, when the sturdiest and jolliest subordinate elbowed himself a little in advance of his fellows, and exhibiting a very hot and flushed countenance, pulled a single lock of gray hair in the middle of his forehead as a respectful salute to the company, and delivered himself as follows, rubbing the palms of his hands very hard on the blue cotton handkerchief as he did so. We're allowed to take a liberty once a year, gentlemen, and if you please we'll take it now, there being no time like the present, and no two birds in the hand worth one in the bush, as is well known leastways in a contrary sense, which the meaning is the same. A pause, the butler unconvinced. What we mean to say is, that there never was, looking at the butler, such looking at the cook, noble excellent looking everywhere, and seeing nobody, free, generous spirited masters as them as has treated us so handsome this day. And here's thanking of them for all their goodness as is so constancy a diffusing of itself over everywhere, and wishing they may live long and die happy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, when the foregoing speech was over, and it might have been much more elegant, and much less to the purpose, the whole body of subordinates under command of the apoplectic butler, gave 3 soft cheers, which, to that gentleman's great indignation, were not very regular, inasmuch as the women persisted in giving an immense number of little shrill hurrahs among themselves, in utter disregard of the time. This done, they withdrew. Shortly afterwards, Tim Linkinwater's sister withdrew. In reasonable time after that, the sitting was broken up for tea and coffee, and a round game of cards. At 10:30 late hours for the square there appeared a little tray of sandwiches and a bowl of bishop, which bishop coming on the top of the double diamond, and other excitements, had such an effect upon Tim Linkinwater, that he drew Nicholas aside, and gave him to understand, confidentially, that it was quite true about the uncommonly handsome spinster, and that she was to the full as good-looking as she had been described, more so, indeed, but that she was in too much of a hurry to change her condition, and consequently, while Tim was courting her, and thinking of changing his, got married to somebody else. After all, I dare say it was my fault, apostrophe said Tim. I'll show you a print I have got upstairs, one of these days. It cost me 25 shillings. I bought it soon after we were cool to each other. Don't mention it, but it's the most extraordinary accidental likeness you ever saw her very portrait, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, by this time it was past 11 o'clock. And Tim Linkinwater's sister declaring that she ought to have been at home a full hour ago, a coach was procured, into which he was handed with great ceremony by Brother Ned, while Brother Charles imparted the fullest directions to the coachman, and besides paying the man a shilling over and above his fare, in order that he might take the utmost care of the lady, all but choked him with a glass of spirits of uncommon strength, and then nearly knocked all the breath out of his body in his energetic endeavors to knock it in again. At length the coach rumbled off, and Tim Linkinwater's sister being now fairly on her way home, Nicholas and Tim Linkinwater's friend took their leaves together, and left old Tim and the worthy brothers to their repose. As Nicholas had some distance to walk, it was considerably past midnight by the time he reached home, where he found his mother and Smike sitting up to receive him. It was long after their usual hour of retiring, and they had expected him, at the very latest 2 hours ago, but the time had not hung heavily on their hands, for Mrs. Nickleby had entertained Smike with a genealogical account of her family by the mother's side, comprising biographical sketches of the principal members, and Smike had sat wondering what it was all about, and whether it was learnt from a book, or said out of Mrs. Nickleby's own head, so that they got on together very pleasantly. Nicholas could not go to bed without expatiating on the excellences and munificence of the brothers Cheeryble, and relating the great success which had attended his efforts that day. But before he had said a dozen words, Mrs. Nickleby, with many sly winks and nods, observed that she was sure Mr. Smike must be quite tired out, and that she positively must insist on his not sitting up a minute longer. "A most pitiable creature he is, to be sure," apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, when Smike had wished them good night and left the room. "I know you'll excuse me, Nicholas, my dear, but I don't like to do this before a third person. Indeed, before a young man it would not be quite proper, though really, after all, I don't know what harm there is in it, except that to be sure it's not a very becoming thing, though some people say it is very much so, and really I don't know why it should not be, if it's well got up, and the borders are small plated. Of course, a good deal depends upon that." Apostrophe, with which preface, Mrs. Nickleby took her nightcap from between the leaves of a very large prayer book, where it had been folded up small, and proceeded to tie it on, talking away in her usual discursive manner, all the time. "People may say what they like," apostrophe observed Mrs. Nickleby, "but there's a great deal of comfort in a nightcap, as I'm sure you would confess, Nicholas my dear, if you would only have strings to yours, and wear it like a Christian, instead of sticking it upon the very top of your head like a blue coat boy. You needn't think it an unmanly or quizzical thing to be particular about your nightcap, for I have often heard your poor dear papa, and the Reverend Mr. What's-his-name, who used to read prayers in that old church with the curious little steeple, that the weathercock was blown off the night week before you were born, I have often heard them say, that the young men at college, are uncommonly particular about their nightcaps, and that the Oxford nightcaps are quite celebrated for their strength and goodness. So much so, indeed, that the young men never dream of going to bed without them, and I believe it's admitted on all hands, that they know what's good, and don't coddle themselves." Apostrophe, Nicholas laughed, and entering no further into the subject of this lengthened harangue, reverted to the pleasant tone of the little birthday party. And as Mrs. Nickleby instantly became very curious respecting it, and made a great number of inquiries touching what they had had for dinner, and how it was put on table, and whether it was overdone or underdone, and who was there, and what the Mr. Cheeryble said, and what Nicholas said, and what the Mr. Cheeryble said when he said that, Nicholas described the festivities at full length, and also the occurrences of the morning. "Late as it is," apostrophe said Nicholas, "I am almost selfish enough to wish that Kate had been up to hear all this. I was all impatience, as I came along, to tell her." "Apostrophe, why, Kate," apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, putting her feet upon the fender, and drawing her chair close to it, as if settling herself for a long talk. "Kate has been in bed, oh, a couple of hours, and I'm very glad. Nicholas, my dear, that I prevailed upon her not to sit up, for I wished very much to have an opportunity of saying a few words to you. I am naturally anxious about it, and of course it's a very delightful and consoling thing to have a grown-up son that one can put confidence in and advise with. Indeed, I don't know any use there would be in having sons at all, unless people could put confidence in them. Apostrophe, Nicholas stopped in the middle of a sleepy yawn, as his mother began to speak, and looked at her with fixed attention. There was a lady in our neighborhood, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, speaking of sons puts me in mind of it, a lady in our neighborhood, when we lived near Dawlish, I think her name was Rogers. Indeed, I am sure it was, if it wasn't Murphy, which is the only doubt I have, apostrophe, is it about her, mother, that you wish to speak to me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Nicholas quietly. About her. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Nickleby. Good gracious, Nicholas, my dear, how can you be so ridiculous? But that was always the way with your poor dear papa, just his way, always wandering, never able to fix his thoughts on any one subject for 2 minutes together. I think I see him now. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, wiping her eyes, looking at me, while I was talking to him about his affairs, just as if his ideas were in a state of perfect conglomeration. Anybody who had come in upon us suddenly would have supposed I was confusing and distracting him instead of making things plainer. Upon my word, they would. Apostrophe, I am very sorry, mother, that I should inherit this unfortunate slowness of apprehension, apostrophe, said Nicholas, kindly, but I'll do my best to understand you if you'll only go straight on. Indeed I will. Apostrophe, your poor pa. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, pondering. He never knew, till it was too late, what I would have had him do. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this was undoubtedly the case, inasmuch as the deceased Mr. Nickleby had not arrived at the knowledge. Then he died. Neither had Mrs. Nickleby herself, which is, in some sort, an explanation of the circumstance. However, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, drying her tears, this has nothing to do, certainly nothing, whatever to do with the gentleman in the next house. Apostrophe, I should suppose, that the gentleman in the next house has as little to do with us, apostrophe, returned Nicholas. There can be no doubt, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, that he is a gentleman, and has the manners of a gentleman, and the appearance of a gentleman, although he does wear smalls and gray worsted stockings. That may be eccentricity, or he may be proud of his legs. I don't see why he shouldn't be. The Prince Regent was proud of his legs, and so was Daniel Lambert, who was also a fat man. He was proud of his legs. So was Miss Biffin. She was no, apostrophe, added Mrs. Nickleby, correcting herself. I think she had only toes, but the principal. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.